Hello and welcome back to the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. And once again, I'm glad to be joined by co-founders of Loose Heads, Rob Shutton, Mark Shutton and Dave Nicol. How are we guys? Are we okay?
Well, good, thanks.
Well.
Good stuff. I was going to say, what have you been up to this weekend? But that would have been a pretty stupid question considering where we are at the moment.
Very quiet weekend.
Yeah, very quiet weekend indeed. But after our first podcast last week, should I say, where we introduced Loose Heads, what it's all about for you guys, we finally got our first guest on, which is which is exciting, and it's none other than Scotland international John Hardy. John, thanks very much for joining us.
Not a problem. It's my pleasure, mate.
And yeah, we said there about sort of self-isolation over the weekend, but it must be a bit of a strange time for you at the moment with obviously the day in and day out of playing rugby, but that's come to a halt all of a sudden.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit different, but to be fair, I'm keeping myself occupied and ticking off a few things off the list that I don't usually get around to, so that's a good time to get all those loose ends cleaned up, and I'm surviving at the moment, so we'll see how you can ask me in another week how I am, and then I'll get back to you.
Because I was going to say, you mentioned off air that you're up in Edinburgh at the moment, is that right?
Yeah, up in Edinburgh, just at girlfriend's place. So, I'm just Bell's here a year or so ago. So it's good to get back here, and I suppose not much of a look around this time. It's just more of four walls.
Yeah, I was going to say you must have been keeping busy, John, because I saw the Loose Heads video of A Wonderful World go out on the weekend. Do you enjoy being part of that?
Yeah, I did enjoy being part of it, but it was tough to watch myself when I was watching it back, to be fair. I'd definitely be in the lower percentile of good singers in the rugby world anyway.
Singing not going to be a new hobby then for you?
No, I actually, when my girlfriend was taking the takes of it, she couldn't stop laughing, and then it made me laugh, so it ended up taking about an hour to do that.
Rob, your thoughts on John singing? It wasn't that bad, was it?
You're just being nice. I know it made you laugh,
but just on that idea, Rob, you must have been delighted with how it came about and how it was received by the social media world, if you like.
Oh yeah, 100%. We even got a mention from Niall Horan from One Direction. Jiffy tweeted him, so really 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 well received, and hopefully it put a smile on a lot of people's faces. So get involved, John.
I've noticed as well that on social media this week, you guys have been offering 30% off merchandise for the NHS staff. That's a really good touch from you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, we're keen to recognise all the hard work going on out there from sort of the NHS and other frontline workers. So it's not much in the grand scheme of things, but hopefully it can help put a smile on a couple of faces.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll crack on with the chat with John. Obviously, the first guest on the Loose Heads pod, which is really good. So we're just going to talk to him about how he got involved with the foundation of Loose Heads, but also have a chat with him about his rugby career in New Zealand, obviously up in Scotland, Edinburgh, of course, during the World Cup with Scotland as well, and now with Newcastle. So first of all, John, obviously, I think you've been in the UK for 5 years now, if that's right?
Yeah, that's pretty much spot on.
And you've chosen Scotland and Newcastle to base yourself in the UK. That must have been an interesting choice for you when you first touched down in New Zealand, from New Zealand, sorry.
Yeah, there was the one that actually got me the most was the darkness in the winter, to be fair. and I thought I was leaving. I'm right down the south of New Zealand, right in Dipton, near Invercargill. So it's been deemed cold in New Zealand as well. So to be fair, I didn't shift for the weather.
No, absolutely. And in terms of just the Loose Heads involvement to start with, John, I mean, what made you get involved with Loose Heads? Was it Rob coming to you, or did you notice Loose Heads and go to the guys?
No, I approached Loose Heads. I was looking at their page and it seemed like the perfect fit for me. And I always wanted to be involved with a charity around that sort of mental health aspect. I approached, and luckily enough, I was able to become an ambassador for them.
And why did you say that it was like the sort of perfect fit for you, John? I mean, why did you think it was a perfect fit for you, though?
I think I'm passionate about others, the importance of mental health, and I've been in a lot of teams where it's I've seen it happen to other people, And then with myself and anxiety and all that sort of stuff, I just, wanted to share my experience and what I've been through and just changing the stigma around it. It's going to be hopefully be as common as talking about a physical injury.
Talk about sort of your anxiety there, John, and sort of your mental health as well. I mean, when did that first come to your mind that you were struggling a little bit with your anxiety?
I think it's overthinking things, and being in a spot where you're using all your energy into the wrong places. You'll sit there and worry, and it's distracting, and it makes you at the end of the day just feel you just got no energy. As a rugby player, you want to be saving as much energy as possible because you've got a strenuous job in terms of training and everything like that. So, and yeah, it can get to you, and it can affect your day-to-day living. So, if you can just control that a wee bit more and putting your thoughts to the right things, then it's a good thing. And so that's what I've dealt with. It's never going to go away, those worrying. I think that's normal for everyone. But it's when it gets out of hand where you need to really start thinking and get some help.
Yeah, because you mentioned, I know you've done a few interviews since you left Edinburgh, but that was a tough time for you with the way it ended and sort of you getting back into rugby at Newcastle, John. Was that sort of the moment where you thought you need to sort of control that anxiety and look for help where you can?
Yeah, I think I always had that worrying aspect for a lot of my career, but it wasn't until I actually got to the UK where I actually started to realise, and I think being away from your family and being away from where you're comfortable can lead to that. And there's a lot of players in that same situation. Obviously, I got, when I released from Edinburgh, you're just being told I wasn't required. So it was expected of what happened due to my suspension. But and then I picked up a back injury and had surgery. And then I was trying to find a club for 4 months. Obviously, my contract medical at Clermont didn't go to plan. I think being in a situation where you've had a contract since you're 18 years old and then you've got 4 months where 10 years later or 12 years later when you haven't got a job and you're wondering if you're going to ever play professional rugby again, it's a pretty scary feeling. And but it was, to be fair for me, it was a real good eye-opener, and it reminded me of how much I love the team environment and appreciation of how lucky I am to be in that position. So it was a good time in terms of thinking about how lucky you were when you were doing that. And then I suppose when I did get a contract with Newcastle, and I was grateful for the opportunity, and they had big faith in me. So when I actually got that opportunity, it was a new lease of life, I was sort of say.
Yeah. So was it important for you, Rob, then, when John approached you to sort of get him involved because of what he's been through?
Yeah, of course. So when John initially got in touch, he sort of mentioned that he wanted to get involved with, telling his own story really about his own mental health struggles that could potentially help others. And as with all of the ambassadors, they help us so much in getting to play, getting over to places that we couldn't get. So one thing that John did mention that was that, as he enters the last few years of his career as well, he wants to use our platform to help widen his network outside of rugby. And, we'd be honoured to play a part in that transition from John's everyday rugby life to post-retirement plans. So, we thought, John's a valuable member of the team, and hopefully he can speak about his story and hopefully join this podcast too and sort of, touch on some of those stories and help others.
Yeah, agreed. And Mark, do you echo sort of Rob's sentiments there? Because we've talked a number of times in previous chats we've had about how important people with stories are to talk about them, and you guys getting them on board.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also great to have a number 7 on board.
That's why we don't usually last as long as you're on now, say.
I was obviously doing it wrong then. I lasted till I was 47.
I don't think I'd get to that, I'll tell you that much.
And also, John, I mean, you mentioned there about sort of getting back into the game, a new lease of life with Newcastle. And I've seen you've retweeted a few of the things from the RPA. I mean, how important is their role as well within that professional game?
Yeah, I think it's massive. I've come with clubs before that haven't had an RPA. So when I didn't realise the importance of an RPA and how much easier it makes your day-to-day training. They cover all the things that you probably don't want to do yourself. They do those nitty-gritty sort of things. We've got a really good, the guy that comes in, Mike McCarthy, he's awesome for us. He comes in 2-3 times a week and he's got stuff there for you to look at in terms of how you want to go, where you want to go in your career in terms of outside of rugby. So he's always coming up with opportunities for you and that sort of stuff. And then if obviously they're big into, they'll help with mental health and everything like that. So they'll put you in the right path in terms of where that is. So yeah, they've got pretty much everything covered. And I didn't realise the importance of actually having an RPA was until you actually had one.
Yeah, because I mean, is that something you'd like to see more of across the game, John, that someone does come into the club and talk to players about this? Because we had a chat last week on the podcast about mental health is seen as a, rugby is seen as a macho sport, sorry, and men coming out and talking about mental health may seem difficult. So is that something you'd like to see more clubs getting involved with that?
Yeah, I think it's become a lot bigger in the last 1 or 2 years, I think. I think it's growing and I think there's a lot of positive stuff around that. But if we can just keep growing that sort of stuff and make it as normal as possible, then I think that's what the loose heads want. So I think it's just so important.
Yeah, and Dave, I mean, do you go along with that as well? That I know the RPA do a great job, but it's all about filtering this down to every level of the game.
Yeah, that's the big thing. It's having kind of the guys and girls at the very top of the professional game sort of opening up. And kind of we hope that by seeing essentially our peers out there talking about these things, it will then, like you say, filter down into those amateur ranks, juniors and things like that.
It's great to have John on the podcast because, you know, he's one of a number of ambassadors who have a great story to tell, and we'll go into that a little bit further. But I think we'll move on to the rugby chat now, John, if you don't mind. And obviously, we mentioned you've been in the UK for a number of years now, but let's go back to sort of your days playing back at home in New Zealand. I mean, what was that like growing up over there, playing in a country which literally lives and breathes a sport?
Yeah, I think it was massive in New Zealand. It was from you when you were 5 years old. It was what you lived and breathed. And I was lucky enough to play quite a few years in New Zealand and play for Southland Stags and then the Otago Highlanders. So I really loved my time there, and I wouldn't take it back for anything. It was a great experience and something that I really loved.
Yeah, I might put you on the spot here, John, but obviously you played in that Highlanders team with some very well-established All Blacks now. Anyone that stood out in particular when you were playing with them?
Yeah, I think one guy that probably always stands out in terms of work ethic and hard work is probably Ben Smith. Pretty amazing sort of athlete and so humble as well, down to earth, just a good guy, you know. And just shows how far he's gone, and he was the captain for my last season or two, and just the way he approached things, I thought, he was pretty special in his own right.
Yeah, was there anything, obviously you moved to Edinburgh, John, but was anything sort of wanting you to stay in New Zealand, or what was the main reason for you deciding to move over to the UK then?
Yeah, I think I had always wanted to go abroad and play rugby, and I think it was the right time for me to go overseas, and luckily I did come overseas. I had a great opportunity, and I joined up with the World Cup training squad, and it was in July 2015. Obviously pretty scary in its own right, coming over not knowing a lot of people, one or two people, and marginally knowing them as well. But yeah, after the first couple of weeks, started to get the groove of things. And obviously, you know, being in a different environment and not being comfortable sometimes brings out the best of you. I'll talk about a new lease of life before, but I think that was a new lease of life in sort of rugby as well. So yeah, I was lucky enough to join the squad there and come over and join Edinburgh as well. So yeah, I don't regret anything about that decision, and I've loved the time in the UK as well.
Yeah, because it really was sort of a baptism of fire for you, John. Because if I'm right in saying, I saw this when I was doing a bit of research, that you'd never been to Scotland before playing for them. Is that right?
Yeah. It was a bit of a shock in terms of fans, media, and everything like that. Obviously, you hadn't been in the country and everything like that, so. All I was thinking about is proving myself to my teammates, and the rest would take care of itself. So, obviously, a scary time, but at the same time, very character building and something that put me in good stead for my rest of my career.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about sort of a new lease of life there, but did it sort of help you that you were sort of just burst onto the scene with Scotland, and you didn't have that maybe that pressure of expectation that maybe an experienced international might have had going into a World Cup?
Yeah, I suppose when you first come into it, you haven't got a lot of expectation on your shoulders, so it's a lot easier. I think it's that year after, which is probably second year syndrome in most forms of rugby, which is the hardest. I think they expect things and everything like that, so that's where a lot of rugby players will find it tough. But yeah, it was obviously had no expectation, so, and we had a really good coach who had a lot of faith in me, so yeah, couldn't thank him enough. And all the boys, to be fair, were really good, really welcoming. So yeah, no, it was good.
Yeah. So was the move to Edinburgh already in the pipeline before you came to Scotland, John, or was it just sort of you played so well in that World Cup that you got a deal?
I signed just before the World Cup, so. It was good to have something knuckled down before I actually started the World Cup, in case something you don't want to, you always got to prepare for the worst sometimes. But yeah, I come up over here with, I think it was a month contract, 2 month contract to see how I went to see and make the squad. So to be fair, I didn't come over with a lot. So to come over and only have a little deal on the table for a couple of months. It was scary, but it worked out the way I planned it to anyway, where I was hoping it was going to.
Yeah, I was going to say, that must have been pressure for you, but you seem to thrive under that pressure, John, because, I mean, to score a couple of World Cup tries, I mean, I covered the World Cup for TRU, and Scotland was one of the teams that I followed quite a lot, and I remember sort of going to King's Home and watching you guys play Japan. I mean, what was that sort of experience like for you? Because, like you said, you had a two-month contract awaiting you. You'd never been to Scotland before. You just moved to the UK, and you were there scoring World Cup tries. That must have been quite surreal, but at the same time, exciting.
Yeah, no, it was awesome to be on the sort of bigger stage in rugby. But yeah, no, it was pretty cool to be able to play it. Obviously, Twickenham and then later Murrayfield, and you play it. Some awesome stadiums, and during the World Cup, the buzz was awesome. So to come straight over and to be involved in that, I'm just pretty grateful, really. And it was something I won't forget.
Yeah, any memories from the 2015 World Cup stand out?
I'll tell you what, it wasn't Joubert finishing the game against Australia. anyway. No, it was pretty cool. Obviously, getting to that quarterfinal, that was probably the highlight against Samoa. They put about 3 or 4 tries us in that first half, so that was a pretty cool moment, to be fair. And obviously, that first game against Japan was. Pretty cool, as I had my mum and dad come all the way over from New Zealand, and that was the first game they watched me play for Scotland, so that was a pretty special moment as well. I'd have to pick that one.
Yeah, and for the rest of the guys, Mark, Rob, Dave, any standout moments from that World Cup with it being on a home turf for us?
It might not sound like it, but being a Scotland fan and being at Twickenham for that semi-final, watching Joubert run off at the end was absolutely devastating. I remember having to console the poor Scottish lad in the stands afterwards, who was pretty much in tears on the back of that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really forgot about that. It still comes out, and it was over 4 years ago now.
I was still remembering Gavin Hastings commentating it on the radio, and he couldn't believe it. He just couldn't believe it. He ran, he sprinted off the pitch, didn't he?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, obviously it was pretty gutting, but it's in the past now. You can't really do anything about it. And I think, and I don't think he reffed too much after that, to be fair.
I remember because I covered the game in the press box, and it was absolute chaos at the end because we didn't know what had happened.
I don't think I know what happened myself.
I was going to come on to that game. I mean, I think that was the first time probably, John, that Scotland had really sort of burst onto the scene in the last sort of modern era, if you like, and showed the world what they were capable of. Did you get the sense going into that game against Australia that you could get the better of them?
Yeah, I think we did. I think the game was a bit interrupted in terms of we had two guys, I think we had a suspension for a left tackle, and then they contested it, and it was Ross Ford and Johnny Gray, two important players back then, and they got off just on the Friday. I think it was a Friday night before the game, so it was pretty. I think that was a victory in its own right, and I think that put everyone in pretty good spirits in terms of we were going in that game. It was just a good buzz around everything. So yeah, we knew we were in for a big sort of game, but yeah, we were nearly there, but just not quite.
I don't want to keep banging on about it, John, but I mean, what was sort of the atmosphere like in the dressing room, if you don't mind me asking, because I know Verne came out after the game and he's quite diplomatic in what he said, but you guys must have felt absolutely gutted that it had been taken away from you and it was unjustified.
Yeah, I think the first thing I remember Verne saying is we didn't help ourselves in terms of the way we played. So he was happy with the performance, but we could have been better as well. So it's obviously not all to blame on him. It was actually quite funny. John Welsh, he's the prop that, so it actually went over the back of line out and I slapped it back and John Welsh jumped on it. So he was at Newcastle last season, still this season. He's been hurt for a while now. And we always have a joke that because we were the two, he was the person that got abused. And I think I was the one that tapped it back. So we always have a bit of a laugh that we're Scottish worst enemies.
Yeah, you have to have 5 years on, you have to have a smile about it, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's only a game of rugby.
And obviously, you know, the Scotland career was sort of the start of your Scotland career was sort of the platform for you, John, to move on with Edinburgh. Did you feel like that was a really good start to your career in the UK? Because, like you said, there was pressure on you, but you managed to perform to a really good level in Preston. That set you in good stead for your time in the Pro 12 then?
Yeah, no, it was really good. We had a really good start to that season as well. It was good. Obviously, I knew a lot of the lads from Scotland, but going back to it, obviously, into another team, but I knew quite a few of the foreign boys from New Zealand there as well, so that was good. But really loved my time with Edinburgh. It was good. Obviously, had quite a few injuries that didn't help in terms of playing a lot, but I absolutely loved Edinburgh as a city and the people, and obviously we didn't get there. We had some really good results over Glasgow a lot of the time and in the Pro 14, but they're obviously going with strength to strength at the moment, and they were really going well in that Pro 14 until was obviously postponed, suspended.
So you look back at your time in Edinburgh fondly. Obviously, the way it ended must have been really tough for you.
Yeah, it was tough, obviously. The ban obviously didn't help me in terms of staying there. So it was obviously tough to leave, but it wasn't unexpected, if you know what I mean. I sort of knew when I come back, because I come back from suspension, and then I've obviously played another 2 or 3 months, and I was played really. I thought okay for myself, and obviously you knew you weren't probably going to get signed out the rest of the season, but you could put your best foot forward in terms of hopefully picking up another club. Obviously really loved my time at Edinburgh.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you quote as well, John, that in a couple of interviews you've done since then, that you did feel like damaged goods as well. So was that tough when you were trying to find a new club?
Yeah, it was. It was tough, and it especially didn't help that I think I got a back surgery 2 weeks before the end of the season. So it didn't come at the best times in terms of medicals and everything like that you had to do. It was in a bit of a spot, and luckily Clement came to me to sort of do a trial in terms of to see how my back had recovered. But obviously, I had another hiccup with that after surgery. But Newcastle took a bit of a risk on me, and it paid off.
Yeah, because I know with the Clement stuff, you can probably see it from an outsider looking in as positive and negative, because they did give you that opportunity to go on trial with you, but in the end, your back injury hampered you. How do you see that sort of small period of time in France for your job? Did you see it as sort of a positive overall, or was it a bit mixture of both?
Yeah, no. So what actually happened is my good mate from Southland, Jamie McIntosh, was playing for Poe. And I remember ringing him up, and I was like, I think I'm going to head back to New Zealand, and just because he's just like, no, you're not, you're coming over to stay with me. So I jumped on the plane, stayed with him, fed me, well, I helped as well, I suppose, gave me a bed and said, pretty much, you're not leaving here until you back playing. So that was good of him, really appreciate how he looked after me, and he was really awesome. So and obviously things took a while, but they obviously got them, and he was right.
Yeah, and obviously you said at the top of the podcast that you got the move to Newcastle, and it gave you that new lease of life. I mean, mentally for you, John, how much of a boost was that?
Yeah, it was awesome. Obviously they had a great year the year before into the top four. So just getting there, they're a good bunch of lads, you know, welcomed me in. And yeah, just to obviously have my first taste of Premiership rugby was pretty cool as well. And it was obviously wasn't the year we wanted in terms of getting relegated, but I thoroughly enjoyed getting out there and playing some footy.
Yeah, and Rob, just on sort of John's journey, if you don't mind, do you get a few players coming to you who have been in similar situations, John, where their career is at a crossroads, but they've managed to work the way out of it? Or is, you know, John's story just one of many unique ones that you have?
I think John's the first one where he's come to us and he sort of said that, you know, he wants to help out with his own story, and that's brilliant for us, because you know, like I said before, it helps others, it inspires others. You know, and hopefully from John's story, we get a couple of other players who come to us as well, and who are in a similar boat. And you know, we can hopefully be that platform where you can sort of speak about that journey and that story, and like I say, inspire others.
John, I'm fascinated to know that you've played under two interesting characters, Dean Richards and Vern Cotter, who, yeah, in that horrible hackneyed phrase, they take no prisoners. Yeah. Are they pussycats when you get to know them, or are they proper Rottweilers?
No, so when I first came over, Vern was obviously in that the World Cup 2015. What we get with Vern is, yeah, he's straight up and down, you know if you've done well, and you know if you've done wrong. But to be fair, he was one of the best coaches I've had, definitely. He doesn't beat around the bush, and that's what you want. Some players don't like that, but personally, that's what you want. You know where you're going wrong, and you know when you have to improve. So, and Vern was, he was really good to me in terms of when I come over. So can't thank him enough, to be fair. And yeah, even though he's a bit hard nosed and stuff like that, I think it's really good, and that's something I sort of like in a coach. And yeah, Dean's, to be fair, yeah, Dean's a, he's actually, he's quite witty, quite funny, and but he's serious as well. And yeah, I've enjoyed being under him, and now he's been really good as well in terms of plucking me out of where I was just in France. I don't know, wasn't really holidaying, but half holidaying. So to for him to have that faith in me and to come over and give me a shot was it was pretty awesome, to be fair.
Cheers. Have you played under Jamie Joseph as well?
Yeah, I've played. Yeah, so I've probably had three hard-nosed sort of coaches, haven't I?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I was, Jamie Joseph was 2011 to 2012 to 15, I think it was, maybe 11. So I had him for three seasons. He was the same, no sort of straight up and down sort of guy. He was a really good coach as well. Pretty simple in what he did and what he tried to get across. I think when Tony Brown come over to be part of the Highlanders as well in 2015, they mixed really well and they had a bit of everything in terms of they were so different in their approach. So I think that worked really well as in terms of how the coaching structure worked as well, and that's probably why they were so successful as a coaching pair.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, on the Newcastle stuff, obviously the situation we find ourselves in now, Johnny, so obviously went down to the Championship. You guys had a really good season up until the point where a couple of weeks ago it was announced from the RFU that the season, well, all the seasons below the top flight of English rugby would be suspended. I mean, it's obviously been a tough period for everyone. But for you guys at Newcastle, how did you feel when that news came through?
Yeah, I think we were obviously on a good run and we were on our way to hopefully getting promoted back into the Premiership. Obviously a bit of disappointment, but obviously a lot of understanding around the situation we're in now. So I think the boys, yeah, they're obviously disappointed, but we knew that it was more important that we didn't play rugby and look after everyone else, our fans and other people in the UK. So yeah, it was a pretty a simple sort of mindset to be in that, you know, these bigger things happening in the world right now than playing some rugby.
Yeah, when you joined, John, did you get the sense that the club knew the direction they wanted to go back in? Because it might have been easy for them to get rid of Dean after relegation last year, but you guys are stuck with him. And has that helped you guys in sorts of your philosophy moving forward? Do you think in your aims moving forward?
Yeah, I think it is. Obviously, our aim this year was to get promoted back into the Premiership and have a Premiership standard sort of, you know, don't have dips and weeks and don't underperform some games. So it was, I think it was more of a consistency thing for us. And I think we were doing well in that sort of area as the season went on. So obviously not an ideal time to not have any more games, but hopefully in a couple of weeks we might get promoted. You never know. So yeah, fingers crossed there.
I reckon John's had his most enjoyable season. He just can't let on, because playing there with, and I'm not going to say lesser opposition, but Newcastle's a professional club, isn't it? Professional club playing in the Championship.
Yeah.
You must have been playing against a few tens who'd be bloody terrified against you.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, like there's some hard wee buggers around, to be fair. So obviously when we did play the Championship sides, they're always going to step up against you and put you up one hell of a fight. So to be fair, the competition's been really good. Yeah, we've had some tough games. Obviously, Ealing away was probably one of our toughest, and then you've got Cornish Pirates, and you've got Coventry were doing well as well. So no, there's some good opposition, and to be fair, you get to play on some pretty boggy pitches, which brings it back to a bit of old school, which is good sometimes.
Do you find, John, in this day and age we live in professional rugby, that the academies provide the players, whereas for the last 6 months or 12 months maybe you've seen players playing in the Championship that you must think, do you know what, with a bit of application and a different path, they could make it in the Premiership, but they've never had that chance?
Definitely. I think it's such a opportunist, I think, is a big word, that for if someone gets an opportunity on a big stage or a big game, you know, they're always going to step up and put their best foot forward. So I think it's about having the right break, and I've seen so many players just get an opportunity through a couple of injuries, and they've been called up and they play a good game, and you know, they're at that club for 4 or 5 years. There's so many obviously good internationals, prem players that have come through the Championship, and it's if you can pick a player out of there, I can probably pick quite a few that if definitely they went into a different environment or got that opportunity, they would definitely succeed in where they go.
Just on that, John, you know that you've played all three. You've played in the Championship, you've played Pro 14, Pro 12, you know, that Premiership standard. You've played international rugby. Just go into the international setting. Do you just get no time whatsoever? Is it just a million miles an hour from the different word go?
Yeah, I think it is. It is. It's obviously not as much time to make decisions. And obviously, the players are a lot quicker and stronger and everything. Yeah, you can't. I think probably the one thing in international rugby is if you don't do something, if you make a mistake, you're going to get punished for it. If you drop back in the D line, or you're not fast enough, or you get your footing wrong, you're going to get punished. There's so many good players, and there's no room for much error. You could do not even something too much wrong, and you know, someone's through that gap. So I think it's just the margin for error is just so small, as sometimes maybe in the Pro 12, the Pro 14, you could get away with those sort of things. Even in the Premiership now, I remember last year, you make a mistake and everyone's getting fitter, faster, stronger, skillful. So I think it's just breeding through into the Premiership as well. And I think if you make a mistake there, you get punished as well. So I think the level of rugby is definitely is getting better every year, and it's just going to become a lot harder and a lot more demanding on the body.
Yeah, and just finally, John, on the rugby side of things, in terms of you moving forward now, obviously we'll wait and see what happens with Newcastle. But personally, what do you want to achieve? Obviously, I know you were back in sort of the Six Nations setup last year, I think it was. So have you got still got your eyes on Scotland ambitions moving forward as well?
Yeah, I think that's something that I'd still love to be involved in. But obviously, it's about playing well for Newcastle and doing well there and getting a spot there. Obviously, Scotland have got a really strong contingent of back rowers as well, so it's obviously going to be tough. But if that opportunity ever comes up and I get the opportunity again, it'd be awesome. But at the same time, I'm having a great time at Newcastle and enjoying everything there.
Great stuff, John. Well, we're now on to the important part of the podcast, the final part of the podcast, which I know Dave and Rob are delighted that we've introduced. Mark, I think it's probably over to you. I think John's getting his paper ready, as we can see there while we're recording. But over to you in terms of John's all-time 15. Just explain the concept for us, Mark.
So, well, it's actually brilliant to introduce this, because John is from...
Look how excited you are.
John is from the land of the long white cloud, where, for me, rugby was invented, and all the great players have come from there. And just massively, I'm as English as they come, but just to hear your world 15 will be a pure pleasure for me. But the premise is, just to get us all on the same page, that the Martians have landed and they've challenged Earth to a game of rugby just to decide the future of the civilization. So not a great deal at stake. We've done the toss, we've done it through rock, paper, scissors, and we've lost the toss. So the game is going to be played away on Mars. There are no time boundaries. You can have any player from any era. And just so we get it right, we can have a 1 to 15, which are the best players in those positions. But absolutely, there's going to be three subs. Because I don't know if Dan Carter is going to make your 15. He doesn't make my 15, but he is one of my subs personally. But nobody's interested in my 15. They're interested in John Hardy's 15. But also, I think with the experience you've had and the travels you've been on, I'd love to hear who your coach is, who your water boy is, who your team manager is, and who your kit man is. Because we'll probably be going on a big long tour to Mars, and it's important we win. So I'm really interested. Come on, John, tell us.
Well, I've actually got my 15, and a reason why, because obviously it's going to take 4 weeks to get there, so you need some good tourists as well as good players. So you're kind of dicing up if you want good players or good tourists. It's 50-50, isn't it? So my 15, I went Ben Smith, just an out-and-out good player and guy. That's what you need. You need genuine sort of blokes on the way to Mars.
No arguments.
Yeah, so 14, I went Sinotti, comes out with some absolute, some great one-liners. So it's human, a bit of razzle-dazzle, because we'll need that. 13, Manu Tuliangi. Obviously, up in Mars, it's where you need a bit of gain line, so, and a bit of brutality. So I've gone with him at 13. No, at 13. So these can be either centres. Number 12, Jack Goodhue. Every team needs a mullet, so it'll be good to see that flocking round in Mars. And number 11, I went, obviously, Jonah Lomu. Just a freak in nature, to be fair. And someone that's pretty iconic. That would be awesome to have in your team.
He properly redefined, I reckon. I was 1995 when he came along. He properly redefined. Yeah, and now everybody's got a 6'4" winger.
Yeah, I know. I still remember him running over Mike Capp on the corner against England. That's one. That's kind of when he came to it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Come the big thing he was. Number 10, I'm not too sure if you know him. His name's Marty Banks. Played for the Tasman Marcos and the Highlanders. Just a guy that we used to call him Screech off, what was that program?
Saved by the Bell?
Saved by the Bell. Looks exactly like him if you ever have a look. So he was a humorous guy. So, and he was actually a pretty good rugby player for a stick man. number 9, I went Greg Laidlaw. Like, you need a reliable boot with the weather conditions in Mars. You never know what it's going to do. So I've gone for them for that, the reliable boot and a bit of leadership. Number 8, I went Nasi Manu, who's currently in Benetton at the moment. Played with him quite a few times. He's good on the ukulele, so you need a good sing-along if you're going to be that amount of travelling. Number 7, I went Martin Williams. Need a scavenger, need a good hunter. That's who I went with.
That's a massive call for you.
Yeah, I know.
You'll never be allowed back into the gates.
Some of my legends. I had to mix it up a bit. I could have picked Michael Jones or Geoff Caulfield, but I didn't. I just went for someone a bit out of the box. Number 6, Dave Denton. David Denton, obviously retired just with concussion not long ago, but he's probably one of the best tourists I know, so I've definitely put him in that for that sole reason. Number 5, Martin Johnson. If you ever get any strife up there, hopefully he's there to help you. so that's why I've got him there. And then number 4, Brad Thorne. Few origin stories. You need a good storyteller, and he tells a few good state origin stories. So he'd be one of their main men to have up there as well. Number 3, WP now. This is someone that can cook a good braai on. So he's pretty awesome at that. So he's a big nugget, so that's what you need. Number two went Ross Ford. You need a bit of old school when you need a bit of old school values up there, and especially on a trip like that. So I've got him. And number one, I've got my good old mate, Jamie McIntosh, as a captain, a good leader, good on the court sessions, and that's what you need, a bit of fun every now and then. Coach, I went Tony Brown. I've actually got a wee quote from him. He used to say when we used to be playing, was the beers always taste better when you win. So that's always stuck with me for quite a while. Now, I haven't got three extra players because I only went with 15, no reserves. But I'll come up. You might think this is a bit weird, but I've got the Knights rugby players for my manager, Waterboy Kitman. Former manager, I've got, you know, like with managers, sometimes players and everything like that can, you know, influence them or steer them in the right direction, give them a bit of abuse. So I thought if we could have Gordon Ramsay in there, then you're not taking too much bollocks from him. So he's my manager. Waterboy, I was thinking about inspiration and someone that the boys would listen to if they come on with messages, and that would be Tiger Woods. And then I've got my kit man as Prince Harry. I just think I actually like him. He seems like a great guy. So being in the army, knows how to fold all his stuff and keep tidy. So I was thinking, why not put him as the kit man?
That is some mix of Mars, that.
Oh, I know. I thought it was a bit of a mix.
Well thought really... out, though.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Mark, do you approve?
Mark, what? So the guy you've chosen at 10, I've never heard of, and that's yeah. terrible. But, yeah. but we're there to win a game, so you pick the guy who's going to win the game. Can he actually play rugby?
Yeah, well, I think if a team spirit's high, you can win any game.
I'm fascinated to know why, in that conversation about sevens, Richie McCaw doesn't feature.
Oh, yeah, he'd definitely be in there, but... As I said, I was going for a bit of, you know, a few different countries, you know, bring that team culture together and really yeah. spice it up a bit.
Nice. Love that. Love
great.
It.
Great stuff. That is a perfect way to kick off that section, I think. And a perfect way to end this podcast. I think we've chatted all sorts. Honestly, John, we could probably chat for another 45 minutes, an hour or so about your career and your playing days with Scotland and probably just that Australia game alone. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Thanks very much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was awesome, mate. Thanks for having me.
And obviously, many thanks to Dave, Rob and Mark, as always.
Cheers, John. Cheers, Chris. All right, thank you.
All right, cheers.
Cheers, guys. And that has been another edition of the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Don't forget to visit the Looseheads website at looseheads.co.uk. That's Looseheads with a Z. And also follow them on Twitter and Instagram at Looseheads with a Z as well. Thanks very much, and I hope you enjoyed listening.